He has to pay the iron price. He has to pay the iron price. He'll never respect you while he lives.
Watch it all come around as I lay on the ground. Joffrey, Cersei, Illyn, Payne, the Hound. They all think I'm lost, but I know where I'm found. I'm the blood in the north when it all comes down. My word is my bond, and my bond is my word. Valar, Dohaeris, all men must serve. See as the raven flies, and time slips by. Valar, Morghulis, all men must serve.
Welcome to the Game of Thrones podcast, brought to you by BaldMove.com. We're the officially unofficial podcast for HBO's Game of Thrones television series. Tonight, we consider episode 6 of season 4, entitled The Gods, The Laws, rather, of Gods and Men. The Laws of Gods and Men. Jim, I thought this was an incredible episode in several different ways. What did you think?
It shocked me at the end how strongly I felt about this episode, how good it was, because it felt like they were building toward an episode where all they did was do the trial.
Right.
And that could be very, very boring.
Sure, sure.
It was a risky move, but man, it paid off, and it paid off largely on the back of Peter Dinklage and his just incredible acting.
Indeed.
Oh, my God. I mean, he gave me chills this episode. He was so good.
Yeah. And all that pathos, all that stuff that he's suffered for his family, he's suffered for King's Landing.
Which makes me worry for his life coming up.
Right. I know. I mean, it's like Frankenstein's monster type speech at the end he gave there. And just so good. And, I mean, throwing away his chance at living it up at Castle Black, pissing off the wall every night if you wanted
to.
Yeah,
I kind of felt like it was going that way before it even happened. That doesn't seem like the Tyrion way to do things.
Mm.
Just take what's kind of dealt to him as far as his family goes. I don't know. He always seems to fight back in a way.
Right.
And this time it was certainly more overt and not in the shadows. But
yeah, it'd be interesting to see if Tywin holds Jaime to his promise.
Well, he can't if he doesn't hold up his end.
Well, but I mean, it wasn't his fault.
Sure, but there was no stipulation in that deal that Tyrion had to behave himself.
That's true.
And Tyrion never confessed to the crime of killing him. I think maybe if he had confessed to the crime of killing the king, then, you know, the only punishment for that is death. And maybe if they had found him guilty, but he had never confessed, there would have been a little wiggle room.
Do you think that Tywin engineered this whole thing? Like, do you think he deliberately picked up Shay, knowing what a provocation that would be for Tyrion, hoping that he would do something stupid, that he would refuse mercy, that he would want to die?
I think maybe there's a weird little smile when Tyrion comes back out and Jaime's talking to him, and Tyrion looks up at him as if he's like curious, is this really going to play out the way I think it is, the way Jaime says it will? And Tyrion kind of has like a almost a smile, as close as we get.
I mean, Tywin?
Or Tywin, yes, has as close as he gets to a smile on his face, like a smirk.
Right.
As if maybe he did have something to do with that. But I could also see that maybe Shay was just so bitter at the way that Tyrion sent her away, the way he had to send her away, that she came back and did this of her own volition.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of Shay. I'm not a fan of the actress portraying her. But I do feel like the way they handled that added a lot of pathos that wasn't even there in the original text.
Oh, okay.
You know, everything kind of, you know, has gone exactly the way in the mechanics, but in the books, I think we're led to believe that Shay never really loved Tyrion. And that she's always just an opportunist, and she was kind of a gold-digging, quote-unquote, whore. Where in the TV show, they really gave her a lot of genuine feeling for Tyrion, and I think she, you know,
yeah.
I believe that she loved him, or that's what they were wanted to believe.
Mm-hmm.
So that this, his casting her aside as a common whore, and that, you know, not good enough for her, he was trying to do her a kindness, blew up in his face.
Yeah.
Are you interested in us finding out how the hell Shay came to be in that court, in that trial?
Yeah, I definitely am. I feel like maybe Tywin didn't have anything to do with it, and maybe Cersei did, because she's always been kind of looking for Tyrion's whore, and that's the one that he had that she thought that she had found earlier. Maybe she finally did find her. Who knows?
And let me ask you this, because this isn't book knowledge.
Okay.
The way they've handled this is diverged. Do you think that Bronn has switched allegiance? Because if Bronn put her on a boat to Braavos or wherever the hell she was going, it seems hard to believe that she would be still within Cersei's reach.
Yeah, good point.
In this time frame.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that Bronn has, for whatever, so what do you think of that speculation?
The Bronn has, as much as he can, switch sides.
Yeah, I mean, not like he's ever had any side but his own. But, always been solidly Tyrion's
guy. He's been fairly loyal to Tyrion, sure.
Yeah.
I don't know. I haven't seen any of that yet. And I feel like it wouldn't surprise me. He is a sellsword, and the Lannisters, well, the Iron Bank, and therefore the Lannisters have a bunch of money. So maybe they paid him off. Maybe they kind of found his Achilles heel.
Hmm. I just don't know how Bronn would know, or how anyone would know that this would be, because, you know, this is before Joffrey's dead.
Yeah.
It's literally the day of. So how in the world would anyone know to put a stop to that? You know, I think that all the Lannisters would think this would be a good thing, that he's shipping her off and going to do right by his family, even Cersei.
Except for Cersei. She has some kind of bloodlust or vengeance on her mind when it comes to Tyrion.
Yeah.
Especially as regard his whores. And I feel like if anybody caught Shay and brought her back, it was probably her. But okay. I don't know yet.
You know, again, it's a shame that they've kind of screwed up Jaime's arc, in my opinion. I've decided that I'm going to kind of pretend that didn't happen. I'm going to pretend that
he didn't volunteer himself to...
No, that he did not rape his sister.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Because I think they just royally fucked that up, and there's the only way to... the balance, the scales of what, you know, the bridge the gap between what we were shown and what we were supposed to take away is just to assume that was some colossal directorial editing fuck up, and that was supposedly consensual sex. Otherwise, Jamie's redemption arc is really derailed for me.
Yeah.
However, having said all that, it was very heroic for Jamie to volunteer to do this for his brother to
Absolutely.
Save his life. The fact that it's basically saying that he's washing his hands of Cersei, which again, this is why I had all that preamble, because, and this is something I got feedback and I haven't really had a good time to mention it, but Cersei's the only one for Jaime. He's never had sex with anyone else.
Okay.
You know, and he loves her as a sister and as a lover, and you know, he would literally do anything for her.
Mm-hmm.
And for him to volunteer to go back to Castle Rock and marry another woman and, you know, take up residence there is, like I said, you know, and again, to give away what little shreds of honor he has left by turning his back on the Kingsguard, that was fairly heroic.
Yeah, it was, and he is the only one on Tyrion's side at this point. No one else is defending him, not Varys, not Shay,
Did Varys surprise you?
It fucking surprised me. Yes,
fucking surprised
it did.
Tyrion.
It definitely did. I thought, and I'm not through thinking that Varys might actually end up helping him out. I feel like his comments about, you know, still remembering what he said...
Sadly, I'm not able to forget anything. Yeah,
yeah. I think maybe if anybody's going to get him out of the dungeon, it's going to be Varys. He didn't do it for Ned Stark. He might do it for Tyrion.
What about his brother? What about Jaime?
Man, that's hard to say. Jaime has a lot more connection, I guess, than Varys, because Jaime hasn't said anything. Jaime hasn't got up on the stand and testified against him, so people might think, oh, well, he could be on Tyrion's side. He might have more to lose.
Do you think that it was a relief to Tywin that he was not going to have to kill his son or order his son's death?
No. I think Tywin is a master of spin, and it's evident when Jaime approaches him and And Tywin says something like, he will be punished accordingly. And Jaime says, you will murder him. And he says, he will be punished accordingly. He doesn't want to think about it as this is my son and I'm killing him for a crime he may not have committed. He's just saying, he'll be punished accordingly.
All right.
So I feel like Tywin is able to disconnect himself from it enough.
All right. So that obviously was the big event, but it's kind of like burying a lot of other big events. Let's talk about Dany and her dragons.
Okay.
That was a dragon, son.
That was a dragon. That was a badass dragon.
That looks like a dragon that could win some if not a war, it could win some battles for you.
Sure. Yeah, strafe a crowd of soldiers, strafe an army with that. Oof.
That's a big dragon. What was running through your mind during that scene?
Just the goat part or the part where...
Just the whole, you know, all from, of the... from the moment you see goats to the moment you see burning goats. I was thinking Mars Attacks. That scene of the cows on fire running over the hill. Have you
sure.
seen that?
It's been a very long time.
Oh, God. It's so great. It's so great.
That was a weird movie.
Barbecue on the move. What were we thinking?
It was cool. I just wanted to see a bigger dragon, and it looks like they're continuing to get bigger, especially this big black one whose name I don't know. I refuse to learn the pets' names on
Drogon.
This fucking show. I will not do it.
Drogon. He's named after Drogon.
All right,
Drogon.
He's a dragon. I'll call him Dragon.
Dragon. All right, fair enough.
That's pretty easy.
As long as you don't call him Aragorn or whatever, Aragorn or whatever.
Okay,
whatever the kid dragon is.
I don't know. I mean, that was just a cool scene. I feel like we should talk more about Dany in her throne room.
All right. She knocked her first supplicant out of the park.
Yeah.
Then we have you're gonna love these guys. These guys' names.
Oh,
Hizdar Zolorok.
Yes, I saw that in subtitles, and I said, fuck this, I'm not learning
Wheelbarrow.
That.
Wheelbarrow.
Hizdar, I can get behind, but forget the other two.
The Lorax. Hizdar the Lorax.
Dr. Seuss book.
Uh-huh. What do you think of his a plea for his father and for all the masters, really?
So, this is really interesting. This is possibly making me change my mind about how Dany handled the masters previously. I mean, I think that's what it's obviously supposed to do. It's supposed to make us as an audience question, was it right for her to answer injustice with what she calls justice? And is that justice? Would mercy have been a better option? I don't know that mercy would have been a better option, but I get the feeling like she maybe should have asked a couple questions before she just pick 163 of them and stick them up there on the wall,
right, on
the posts.
Yeah, it shows her youth and inexperience. You're assuming that this guy is legitimate, that he's not just bullshitting.
Sure.
Because there's no, I mean, yeah, that's exactly what you expect a master to say.
That's the other thing. Like,
we're not
if
all
she
bad.
Had if she had decided to show mercy, how does she know who to punish and who not to punish?
Right.
You can't just take them for the word.
What's kind of like
this guy made an impassioned plea and she bought it and she listened and she granted him what little justice or a little mercy she could at that point. You know?
Well, it's just interesting that's part of the you know, burden of governing that you have to, these masters are 1/3 of the population. I've done that math, right? There's
something
one
like
of them
that,
for
yeah.
every three slaves. Maybe they're 25%. I'm bad
ratios.
I'm bad at math.
It would be 25.
So I became a programming so I can make the machines do it for me.
Okay.
But they're a sizable minority of the population and also probably have most of the wealth and power and connections.
Yeah.
You know, Dany's not entirely secure because don't forget the other cities have been in rebellion and they're plotting revenge against her. She's got to find some way to balance her need for justice and to, you know, elevate this lower slave class and also be able to effectively govern and bring these formerly rich and powerful masters and merchants into the fold.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a tough challenge.
That doesn't sound easy at all. I mean, there's a lot of hatred there between those two classes, I assume.
I hope people are buckled in for some gripping political drama because I think
I'm ready.
There's more of 250 supplicants a day than there is, you know, fire and blood, as the Targaryens say.
Speaking of, though, holy shit. Okay, so I complained when she took Marine that they didn't use any of the budget to show us a little bit of that. Okay, this episode made me a little more disappointed in that because I see that they already had the fucking model of the city ready to go, and they didn't want to show a bunch of people running through it, but they showed a lot of cool stuff.
Hey,
this
man,
week.
It takes a lot for Weta Digital to put their massive armies going through the city running amok. I mean, anyone
apparently
can mock up a model.
Just you use the Speed Slave plugin.
I'm freshly pissed off that they didn't remix the title sequence to put the Eerie in last week because holy shit, they pulled all the stops out with Braavos.
Braavos'
city animation was badass. It looks like the coolest mechanical bank anyone has ever invented.
That was super cool.
The money
seeing,
rolling down the ramps.
I saw that. Yeah.
Oh, so cool.
That was super cool. So that was the first time we saw that, huh?
Yeah. This is the first time we've seen Braavos. We've heard a lot of it talk in Iron Bank. It's the first time we've actually seen...
We get Davos and Braavos.
Davos and Braavos. It sounds like a comedy that would be on Friday night on ABC back in the 90s.
This is turning...
After Perfect Strangers, Davos and Braavos. I did an all-new Family Matters.
This really is turning into a
TGIF.
Dr. Seuss book now at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah, and even the shot above the boat. It had the CGI boat had a fucking ton of weight to it. You could see the mass of this thing.
It's so much
cool
better
shot.
Than, because I used to make fun of the naval scenes in season 2 or 3, where it's just basically, they're clearly acting in a box on a dark set, and then and lots of fog. Always fog at sea because it's expensive to show the other ships and all that shit. But yeah, no, that was some really good at sea scene. And going underneath the Titan of Braavos.
Super awesome.
Badass. You'd think with all that money, they'd be able to afford to repair the dude's sword.
Oh, was it
Although,
busted?
Shit, I just had the cold ice water trickle down my spine thinking that maybe that's actually somehow accurate to the books. That, like, the Titan had a broken sword and he killed some fucking stag that was, you know, it's like I can feel 100 emails coming in.
Okay.
No, the Titan of Braavos had a broken sword because it was prophesied. Anyway. But still, fix your broken sword, dude.
I don't know. All I know is it was awesome.
Yes.
So I'm cool with that.
Some good CGI. Another thing I was amazed at was Theon and Yara's plotline assaulting the Dreadfort. And again, the torture they put Theon through is kind of paying off.
It is. It is.
Because they almost had to make us sickened and, like, Jesus Christ, enough to make us buy that he would be this broken.
Yeah, I wouldn't have bought it without that.
Like, he was convinced that this was some kind of trick and that he, you know, there was some terrible punishment if he didn't go back. He's sleeping with the fucking dogs, man.
Yeah. Oh, it's messed up. I mean, he is, and the bath scene really struck at home that he is Ramsay's pet.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what he is. And I compare this kind of treatment of Theon to, you know, the Star Trek Next Generation, There Are Four Lights episode.
Yeah.
But in the end, Picard never broke.
Yeah, no, Picard had a day at Massage Envy. He was at a day at the spa compared to the shit Theon went through.
Yeah, absolutely.
That was 90s era syndication, man. You can't chop off Picard's balls back then.
No, you can't.
Not a network, not a syndicate. It's like, you know, next on Baywatch, Michael Hasselhoff gets his dick chopped off.
Michael, who's Michael Hasselhoff?
Oh, shit, David. I got his
less hairy brother.
There's too much 80s and 90s television coming into my commentary tonight. We need to move on.
John Luke Hasselhoff gets his balls cut off on
Starship,
Baywatch tonight.
The Starship Interpoon.
Baywatch The Next Generation.
Oh, my God. Wow, that's a hell of a mashup.
Yeah, it is.
An awesome performance by Alfie Allen. Whoever plays Ramsay Bolton also was fucking psycho in that battle. Coming in bare-shirted and covered in blood.
Yep.
Not giving a fuck.
Yeah, it was weird how that battle played out. And I don't know that I'm totally satisfied with it. I think if there was a weak point in this episode, it was that.
Yeah.
That they kind of just went in.
It felt like the Ironborn should have kicked ass.
They should have kicked ass or been killed. Like, why did Ramsay just let them go? They've got a fucking castle full of guys.
Well,
and he's just going to let them sneak back out?
Yeah, no, I totally feel a lot of questions about that battle because
okay,
how many guys are in a Dreadfort right now? How many guys are off cavorting with the Boltons and, you know, still mopping up stuff in the Riverlands?
Sure.
Is there just like a garrison left there? We know, actually, that the bulk of their forces is still south of the river because the Ironborn still control that choke point.
Yeah.
So it seems like that Ramsay has a mission for Theon.
Yeah.
Or for Reek. To pretend he's Theon.
It's weird.
It's fucked up.
I want to see how that plays out before I really judge that, because
okay,
that has the potential to also get strange. The other thing is, it appears that the Iron Bank is on Stannis' side at this point.
They kind of are playing it coy,
a little bit.
It seems like that it went from an outright dismissal, an out of hand dismissal, which is ironic, given that Davos only has half a hand. To Davos, with his sheer passion and logic and statesmanship,
yeah,
turning it into a we definitely know that he got approved because he had a shit ton of gold that he's throwing
at. He
had
gold, yeah.
He's throwing at Salador,
his pirate buddy.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so that is what made me think that the Iron Bank is on his side. I don't think Davos just has a bunch of gold sitting around,
yeah,
and especially in these nice little containers in this pouch. And
yeah,
cool containers.
I can't believe I almost fucked that up.
That's how I store my gold, by the way.
This is the shortest episode I think we've got this season, only 52 minutes. But a lot of stuff happened in it because that trial felt like it took forever. And then it had the big emotional payoff, mm-hmm, and then we had the draft. I mean, there's just a lot going on.
I like kind of the little things about that trial, too. They don't have to show Tyrion walking into this room.
Mm-hmm.
But when he does, someone shouts Kingslayer.
Mm-hmm.
And we've talked about, you know, the Kingslayer brothers, and he's mentioned that as well.
Right.
I thought that was cool. And it's just the mood that it sets.
Yeah.
Watching Tyrion walk in here, letting it play out for a good minute and a half before anybody even comes into the throne room, and then Tywin sits on that throne and gets a giant erection immediately. I don't know, it was the mood it set was really cool.
Yeah, and also set against, you know, how I even like the pre-show previously's on just set, it was just one after another of, oh god, Tyrion pissed off this guy and Tyrion pissed off this guy and Tyrion
pissed off this guy.
And every one of those fuckers came to tell their lies and bullshit.
Uh-huh.
And it was. The trial was a farce. Because Tyrion wasn't allowed to cross-examine these guys.
Yeah, he wasn't allowed to speak.
Yeah.
He begged for a single question, which he then used to shame Varys.
Right. To apparent little effect.
Yeah.
Again, great episode, but I feel like we discuss it more, we're going to get into full cast territory.
For sure.
Very excited to do that. Very excited to see what everybody else thought about the episode. Again, as a book fan, I was very satisfied. We will have our full cast out on Tuesday. Look for that then. In the meantime, if you want to send us feedback, do so at gameofthrones@baldmove.com. Of course, you can get in our show threads on facebook.com/baldmove. Please, please, no spoilers in our show threads. And then you can also tweet at Jim @baldmove on Twitter. And that's all I got. We will see you in a couple days. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim. See you then. He has to pay the iron price. He has to pay the iron price. I'll never respect you while he lives. Watch it all come around as I lay on the ground. Joffrey, Cersei, Illyn Payne the Hound. They all think I'm lost, but I know where I'm found. I'm the blood in the north when it all comes.